RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
New Zealand is ending its nearly 30-year ban on gene technology outside laboratories. Science Minister Judith Collins announced new legislation to allow gene technology use, aiming to improve health outcomes, combat climate change, and boost the economy. The changes will align New Zealand with global practices, enabling innovations like CAR T-cell therapy and agricultural improvements. A dedicated regulator, modelled after Australia's system, will be established to manage risks. The legislation is expected to pass by 2025. So we've invited Judith Collins, the Science, Innovation and Technology Minister, to talk to us about this. Minister, welcome to RCR.
Most welcome, Paul.
Okay, I saw the release on X with you and the Prime Minister in lab coats, brand new lab coats.
Weren't they
smart? Bit of a show.
Weren't they smart? You have to put them on to go into a lab, and we were in a lab. So.
Okay, yeah. And I see there's been quite some comments, most of them negative at this stage, I'd have to say, but I guess that's what you get on social media.
No, it's been, I think you're watching the wrong people. It's been very positive from the scientists and people who understand how important this is, but anyway.
All right, some questions for you. You say that lifting the ban will improve health outcomes, combat climate change and boost the economy, but protecting non-GMO exports is vital, isn't it, as the global market is growing substantially, plus 12% per year, and that includes China, India, US. How will you do that? How do you protect?
Well, of course, it's just like we do now. We have organics that are exported, although they're only 0.87% of the export of the primary sector, so very small, but we have different production lines. We are able to cope with those as well as the food that is not organic. But also Australia has been a country that's been dealing with this for about 20 years. They seem to have it sorted. You can do it. You can simply have your organics. You can have your traditional sources of food and way of producing, and you can have your GM. It's like just about everyone else has. So if you look at Australia, US, England, India, China, Japan, just keep on naming them, and we're sort of the outlier at the moment.
I'll put a scenario to you. What happens when GE ryegrass cross-fertilizes with non-GE ryegrass? What are the implications for export markets who see us as clean and green?
Yeah, well, it actually has very little impact because there are tolerances in the GE-free labelling, which is around about 1%. But also that's why we have a gene regulator to make sure that that doesn't happen. It's very important to do that so that we don't get that cross-pollination. There has been one a case I've been told about 20 years ago that was reported in Oregon. And it's never actually been proven, but it was reported as one. So this is not something that is a reality for most situations. And since you are Reality Check Radio, it's really not much of a reality, but that's why you have a regulator.
Okay, well, here's some reality. mRNA is a gene product, and that got put into almost everybody. So where's the trust? There are issues of trust.
Well, people don't have to use GM products. It's not compulsory. It's entirely up to those producers who want to use them. And frankly, as for mRNA, look, I've been immunised with it. I think many people have been and didn't have any problems, but I know that the whole mandate situation caused enormous disruption in the country, and it's one of the reasons that we are progressing with the COVID inquiry around what actually happened. So, but in terms of it, this is not compulsory any more than organics are, any more than non-organics are.
Yeah, I wasn't actually talking about that. What I was talking about is, can we rely on a regulator who didn't even stop that?
Well, the regulator didn't exist.
Well, an authority, an agency.
Well, we're talking about a regulator. And I mean, look, if the Australians can do this well, then surely we can, or are we that stupid?
Who are the independent stakeholders that have been involved in shaping this bill?
Well, there's MB, the Ministry for Business Innovation and Employment, has been undertaking this work. They've dealt with working with people in the gene tech area, but also with iwi. They've had a Māori focus group. They've also been out working with scientists and others, industry involved in producers, all those sorts of people. And of course, we have a full select committee process going on that will go on next year. So anybody who's got wants to have their say will be able to have their say. So everyone's being consulted. Nothing's being rushed through. It's a very normal, traditional process.
Just looking at organic exports, valued at around $560 million, have you engaged with the organic sector?
Yes, well,
given that's a growing sector.
There are a few. They're actually 0.87% of our primary products exported. They're a teeny weeny tiny bit, but they're very important. And for those people who wish to buy organic produce, they can, and they can also sell it. The organics industry is not affected by the non-organic farmers who are right next door to them, because there are always tolerance levels in the organics and certification. It's the same with this. It's no different from any other, different food chain or supply chain. And as I keep saying, if England can do it, Australia can do it, US can do it, Canada can do it, Colombia can do it, Argentina can do it, China can do it, Japan can do it, and the EU is moving in with this same, very similar legislation, except apparently more liberal. Actually, I reckon we could do it.
What if they're all wrong?
Well, they're not, and that's really clear.
Okay.
So if you say something like, let's just give an example, a really practical example. So we had Cyclone Gabrielle that took out all those apple orchards and other orchards in Hawke's Bay. Those poor orchardists have to wait at the moment between 6 to 7 years after planting, replanting, to wait for their apples to grow. We've seen today work in the plant and food research where they can actually produce these apple trees within, that can be fruiting within a matter of months, within a year, basically back operating. The difference if you're an orchardist with no income for 6 or 7 years as opposed to waiting a matter of months is enormous. It's the difference between you losing your entire market share and another country coming in with theirs. And that's one of the things that this actually does. And it also things like blueberries, all sorts of other things. And, of course, nobody needs to buy them. They can just stay with the traditional ones if they want.
Yeah, but when the cat is out of the bag.
No, don't give me that, Paul. You're talking about if just about every country we trade with uses this, is exporting it. You know, the US is the largest exporter of food in the world. They're also the largest exporter, producer of organic food in the world. So, you know, look, seriously, this is 30 years technology and we're catching up.
Are you telling me that apple trees can grow from nothing to fruiting apples? And how long did you say?
Basically within a year, so it's a matter of months that they're actually growing. And, of course, apple trees are grafted always, so that's how you do it. There's lots of other things like that, but we can't use that technology at the moment. We can't even put it in out in a trial in a field or a paddock or an orchard somewhere, but it's in the lab, and we saw some of the evidence of it today.
Back to, you mentioned Australia. The Office of Gene Regulation Technology there is to be copied here, right?
Well, not copied, but very similar. But we learnt from, they've suggested some amendments, which our people are taking on board. And we also, we have the other matter, of course, that we work under the Treaty of Waitangi principles, and that we make sure that we include those particular areas, you know, include Māori advisory panel as well.
So exempt GE products, they'll be labelled as such?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
No reason not to. I mean, this is something to be proud of. It means you're probably not using pesticides or anything else.
So you think there might be some kind of demand generated from those products because of what you just said?
Yeah, I think there'll be a lot of demand for it, particularly if you get, you know, nicer fruit without pesticides, or let's say nicer fruit that's all year round, rather than losing your share of market. I mean, it's one of the reasons that Zespri has to have kiwi fruit farms and orchards in places like Italy, is to make sure they don't lose their shelf space in Europe and other countries. They need to work across seasons. This actually enables a lot of product to be grown here, whatever season.
Okay. Do you think the lack of funding for research into toxic chemicals and GE risk in New Zealand will impair our capacity to assess risk over the longer term, do you think?
No.
No?
No. What lack of funding?
Well, we hear there is a lack of funding into toxic chemical research. Chemicals that are in the marketplace now and being sprayed around the place that are known to be toxic. I'm not going to go through the list, but...
Well, we have a $1.2 billion budget for science in the last budget. And obviously, there's a lot of research that goes on. So, actually, I don't accept that at all.
Okay, here's a more of a philosophical question. How much do you trust the scientists? Because they're only people. I mean, the apple tree that grows in a year, that sounds like kind of Frankenstein. You know, it's a bit on the edge, isn't it?
No.
And people can get really enthusiastic about these things and push it, and we all end up regretting it later.
Well, then don't use it. Don't.
Yeah, but it's out there.
Apple tree. But what's not out there? It's in a lab. Look, I think people need to be very aware that actually I personally do trust the scientists because I trust science, and I also know that science develops. I don't trust conspiracy.
We were told to trust the science 3 years ago, Judith, and it's been a disaster.
Well, mostly it's been economically. And I think, you know, look, there are people who say certain things have affected them. Absolutely accept that that's what they believe. But I also know
it's a fact.
Well, Paul, you've got a particular view. It is not my view. It's certainly not my experience.
Okay, let's not go there any further. All right. Have you read the 2015 report, GE Animals in New Zealand?
What?
Do you believe there are lessons to be learned from that report? It documents horrific deformities and deaths in genetically modified cows. And people worry that this is kind of what can happen in a bigger picture if genetic modification, GE engineering, CRISPR, all that sort of stuff becomes the genie out of the bottle.
Well, I don't know who these people are or what they're worrying about, because actually none of that is happening. So I find that really bizarre.
Well, that has happened.
When?
I mean, I could send you the link.
No, I mean, honestly, animal welfare, all of that is covered under animal welfare legislation. This is not what we're talking about. And CRISPR is actually, I don't know if you realise, it's not actually adding one particular gene to another or anything like that.
It's editing.
It's editing one particular gene that may be causing a problem. And yeah, that problem might be, for instance, a tendency towards a particular cancer. And that's the sort of thing we're talking about.
Yeah. Though it's used wider than that as a technology.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a very smart way of editing a gene. It's often the same sort of thing that happens with traditional breeding mechanisms, which can take many years to actually bring about breeding for a particular genetic trait. And instead of having to spend years, scientists can spend months doing it. But again, it's not compulsory. It's an opportunity for New Zealand.
I want to ask you about NIWA. Ian Wishart has been doing some pieces, and he says you were misled by NIWA in their data that they told you. You got any comment to make about that?
Well, I don't accept. I have to accept what NIWA's advised me, and there's no reason for me not to. I think it's really important to understand that people sometimes see conspiracies, while others of us will say that's the data that there is at the moment. And NIWA has been very, very forthright in its view that it did not mislead me, and I simply have to accept that, and I haven't seen any real evidence other than Mr. Wishart's statements.
Well, he says historical data was missing in plans for big floods, and that they had excluded 1800s and 1900s data that clearly showed that those type of floods had happened before, yet their data started in the 1960s. So what use is NIWA if it doesn't even have a full set of data to work from?
Well, NIWA's a lot more than climate change and climate issues. It also has many other areas of work that it does. But look, this is going down a rabbit hole stuff, honestly, Paul.
11 people died.
People have the information it has. It's provided that information. I've relied on the information. If it's wrong, it will need to correct it. But I haven't seen that yet, and they would need to front up with it. I mean, look, I'm not the expert on weather, and I don't know too many people who are other than those at NIWA and Met Service.
So what other activities does NIWA do?
Well, it does things around the sea. I mean, it has does a lot of research at sea, certainly around oceans, Antarctica. Things like that.
Yeah, what do they do in Antarctica?
Well, a lot of science. So, it's atmospheric, it's weather, but it's also things like they look at what's happening with currents, all these sorts of things. They have a lot of work that they do that is not solely about predicting the weather.
Yeah, but when it comes to lives lost and you've got missing flood data, for example, 41 and 53 they didn't have in their database.
41, 53, what's that? 1941.
1941 and 1953, yeah. I should have put the 19 on the front of it. They didn't have it in there. Maybe if they did have it in there, they could have given a better warning.
Well, maybe. It was certainly, asking for any evidence that they misled or that they didn't have for some particular reason. 1941, I mean, frankly, we were at war. 1953, can't tell you what was happening there. I think sure we were at war.
We were at war.
It's Korean War. We were there. I'm not sure.
What's that got to do with the war?
I don't know quite what the reason is, but I do know that that was maybe wasn't something that NIWA had at that time.
And Ian Wishart found it in the newspapers.
Yeah. Well. Good.
Yeah. So you're confident that everything you hear from NIWA is okay?
Well, at the moment, I'd need to see otherwise. And the fact that it's been a newspaper doesn't necessarily mean that NIWA had it at that time.
Wouldn't you be curious if you were a weather agency serious about that? You'd know off by heart the historical data on that, or you wouldn't have the confidence to pronounce about it.
Well, I think this is something that you need to have a discussion with NIWA about. This is operational.
They don't talk.
That's very operational, and frankly, it's ridiculous asking me about those details.
Well, if you're confident with what they tell you, yet they've left a whole lot of data out, it's fair enough that I ask.
Well, you ask, but I don't have that detail. You'd need to ask them.
Anyway, thanks for the chat. Thanks for coming on. And hopefully we can talk again. All right?
Yeah, have a lovely day. Bye.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.